Naked
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is the 21st day of January. It is 10 o'clock Central Time right now. We are live just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. Thank you guys who are out there tuning in to the program every day, making it part of your daily dose of deprogramming. Today is going to be a heaping helping of daily dose of deprogramming because Ralph Winterode is going to be on the show today. Now, Ralph Winterode, for those of you guys who don't know, is somebody who's really at the forefront in the fight against the legal system in this country. And by legal system, I mean the maritime, you know, fake, absolutely statutorial, jurisdictional garbage that we call a legal system in this country. And Ralph has been fighting that system since he found out about it when that system tried to bite him back in the day. Not one of his aspirations, but we're very lucky to have him working for us and on the side of good, I guess, is how I would put that. So anyway, Ralph Winterode will be joining us at the 11 o'clock hour, 1 hour from now. I will be talking to him about the IRS and the kidnapping of children by Child Protective Services and things like that. But we will also be talking about the difference between the legal system and the lawful system. And, you know, I know that that is a category of or a topic that resonates with a lot of people out there. And we've had a lot of requests to have guests like him on, so I'm definitely looking forward to that discussion that we're going to have today. I'll let you know tomorrow if there's anybody out there who's still on the fence about Hillary Clinton or the Clintons in general. Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton going to be joining us tomorrow, and I think we're going to talk quite a bit about the Clinton oligarchy and some of the sordid history in case anybody out there has forgotten about it. We want to get out in front of this whole Hillary Clinton train before it gets rolling too far down the track here. And then I imagine we'll probably have to do a show about the Bushes as well, just to make sure we can take the legs out from both of those organizations going forward here as we move into the electoral season here. Anyway, lots of big stuff going on around the world. We have a lot of news to get to. Also want to remind you guys, we do have a newsletter that you can sign up for at redpillreports.com over in the sidebar on the right-hand side. So that will keep you guys up to date. That way you won't have to listen to the show necessarily every day, although we do appreciate you obviously listening to the show every day. But that'll be just another way that you guys can keep up to date with the information that's coming out, and a good way to forward that information to your friends as well, so that you can keep other people in the loop too. So that is the service that we are now working on for you guys here at Red Pill Reports. You asked for it, and now you have it. Also, I want to thank everybody for blowing up the Facebook page over the last week or so. I'll tell you what, a lot of people liking Red Pill Reports on Facebook right now, and I know there's a lot of conjecture about how solid that that platform is in terms of privacy and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is another way for all of us to connect with one another. So at the same time, you know, let's use the tools that they give us against them if we can. So if you can take a social media service like Facebook and code it with truth, well, you might actually make a difference. You might get into the faces of people who matter, or might actually have not seen anything like that before. So anyway, if you're looking for us on Facebook, redpillreports.com, we do have a Facebook page. And thank everybody for going to it and blowing it up this last week. It's been really nice. Did you guys watch the speech last night? I tried to watch it. I got about an hour through it. I was pretty impressed with myself. Wow. I gotta say that the temperature in Washington must have risen by about 15 degrees last night with all the hot air that was blowing around in D.C. I gotta tell you, you know, some of the highlights of the speech, well, they sound pretty fantastic. You know, they sound like stuff that I could totally get behind. But at the same time, you got to wonder how much of it was true, how much of it is actually going to become a priority, and how much of it the Republicans would actually pass through Congress given the opportunity to do so. You know, and I thought one of the key things that we've been talking about, obviously, at Red Pill Reports ad nauseum is the economy. The economy is teetering on the edge right now, to say the least. And so, you know, Barack, of course, wanted to pinpoint some of the key things in the economy that that were causing this you know, the lag and the recovery, I guess would be the way to say it. And he cited as his number one reason that the economy was suffering and the number one thing that he could do for people was to make adjustments to child care affordability. So essentially he wants to, you know, he didn't really outline any type of plan, but he's talking about giving tax credits to people with children and probably for people who are using, you know, kindergarten or preschool type care facilities, and looking at tax subsidies for people like that. So, you know, on the surface, it sounds really great. But again, you know, we don't really need to be supporting financially the breakup of the family unit by A, encouraging people to put kids into preschool sooner so that they could, you know, that was another one of his little points was that, you know, by doing this, by allowing, people to have tax credits to take care of pre-kindergarten kids, that would allow more women to get into the workforce, which of course has been the target goal of this whole women's rights movement. And I apologize if you think I'm sexist out there, but that's where this all comes from, is the goal of getting the other half of tax producers into the workforce. And that's what they have attempted to do. And again, so they sugarcoat these issues, saying that they're actually doing something for us. But at the same time, it's really just to kind of promote and perpetuate the status quo. If, you know, maybe that's just my opinion. Anybody in the chat room right now that has a separate opinion, yeah, we try and stay in the chat room all day too. If you go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get into the chat room, I try and be in there while the show is going on. So if you guys have questions or comments or if you think I'm way off track or whatever, just hit me up in the chat room. But anyway, I also kind of think this is going to be a handout to the targets of the amnesty program, because obviously there are a lot of people coming into the country right now with small children, and this would be a pretty easy enticement for them. And again, would lead people to probably vote Democrat. I mean, this is just, it doesn't seem to be too far-fetched for me to believe or to start stringing these little threads together. But that's one of the things that he definitely suggested. He also suggested some other things that I thought were pretty cool, mandated paid leaves, which I did like, the ability to earn sick leave for people. So he really kind of threw the gauntlet down last night. He was very arrogant, very bold in his statements. He actually winked once towards the cameras, which I thought was just, crazy. I mean, you're coming in talking about how wonderful everything is and the economy is fantastic and we've produced all these jobs and everything is great. One of the things, I love it when he brags about how many people he has forced at gunpoint now to sign up for insurance. It seems really strange to me that when you threaten people with arrest or with fines if they don't buy a product, to then come out and brag about how many people you've sold that product to. Seems a little crass, but maybe that's just me. Anyway, he did throw down the gauntlet on that. He threw down the gauntlet on Congress to raise the national minimum wage, which again, you know, that's a slippery slope. Again, I'm of the opinion that if all money is fake anyway, we might as well just be paying people $100 an hour. So, you know, what difference does it make? It's fake money. Put it into the economy. Take it away from the rich people. Whatever. You know, it's all socialism when it comes down to it. I was talking about free community college still. Probably will never, ever pass. The Republicans, a lot of Republicans tweeting during the speech last night with some pretty interesting commentary. One of them, I think, said something about, you know, why stop at free community college? Let's give them free cars and a free house and a $26 minimum wage, which again, you know, that makes sense to me. You know, this isn't going to be, there's no such thing as free community college. It's going to be subsidized by somebody somewhere. So again, this whole concept of pandering to the people who want the freebies, and it's going to work. It's worked in the past. It's gotten him two terms, probably going to see quite a bit more. He talked about reducing the monthly payments for those in college debt, which I think would be a fantastic deal, how he would make that happen. You also have to wonder about this free community college thing, if there's going to be some sort of retroactive clause for all of us who paid out the nose for our very, very valuable, and I'm using that valuable word very loosely here, college degrees, because, you know, many of us will probably never, ever, be out from underneath our debt. And that's some of that debt that you can't ever get away from. So, he did also propose a brand new major infrastructure plan, which I thought was interesting since the Republicans had already proposed it about a week ago. But, we've got some stories coming around from the United States today about a gentleman who passed away from a bridge collapse. And some startling statistics about just how bad the infrastructure here is in the United States. So obviously, that idea of coming up with a large scale infrastructure plan, is a great one. But again, how are we going to pay for all of this stuff? We're $18 trillion in debt. You know, we spend like $1 million a minute on debt in this country. So I don't understand how that's going to happen. And he also proposed new free trade zones with Asia and Europe. So again, I totally agree, Lex, with you in the chat room, man. It's totally a bogus list. My friend Robert was talking to me this morning, just said, you know, most of it seemed very smoke and mirrors-ish. And again, you know, he's talking about, that he, in his terms, has created 800,000 new manufacturing jobs. Where are those at? I haven't seen anybody, I don't know anybody that works in manufacturing. And I come out of a manufacturing background, and I know for a fact that American manufacturing is on the ropes. And that's not conjecture. That's people that I know that still actually make American-made products that are having a difficult time right now. So I don't know. What did you guys think of the speech? I thought it was pretty pretty arrogant. I thought he was very full of himself. And, you know, unless we have some dramatic infusion to the economy that's going to turn this boat around, I cannot imagine getting up in front of the American people with a straight face and saying everything is hunky-dory. You know, it blows my mind, because obviously that's not the case. That's just not the case. I don't care who you talk to. That's not the case. So anyway, that was the speech. A lot of highlights, a lot of boldness, a lot of arrogance, probably not a lot that's going to come out of it. So we'll see what happens going down the road here. But I think it was a waste of time, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm glad I wasted my time doing it so that you guys don't have to, because that's what I try and do for you guys. I'd hate for all of us to be out there absorbed in our televisions. But anyway, let's move on. We've got some international news to go over right now. Big story, obviously, right now coming out of Cuba, the first scheduled meeting between the U.S. and Cuban officials to reestablish diplomatic relations may not lead immediately to the opening of embassies here and in the United States. Here being Cuba, the story is coming out of Havana there. And this was according to a senior State Department official on Monday. State Department officials said that those talks in Havana, which are happening today, Thursday, would largely focus on the terms for reopening embassies in Havana and Washington, including how many diplomatic staff each diplomatic mission and the level of freedom they will have to travel outside of their respective capitals. The United States is also seeking assurances that the security forces that are ubiquitous around the current diplomatic mission in Havana will be decreased, and that visiting Cubans are not harassed. Officials acknowledge that some of these questions may not be settled in this single meeting. Interesting ancillary note here, a Russian intelligence warship docked in Havana on Tuesday on the eve of these historic U.S. and Cuban talks aimed at, obviously, normalizing diplomatic relations. But the Victor Leonov CCB-175 was moored to appear in Old Havana, where cruise ships often dock, but its arrival was not announced by Cuban authorities. The Vishna, or the Meridian-class intelligence ship, which has a crew of about 200, went into service in the Black Sea in 1998 before it was transferred 7 years later to the Northern Fleet, according to Russian media. The vessel previously docked in Havana in February and in March last year, staying there for a few days on each visit, and both of those visits were also unannounced. The highest-level U.S. delegation to visit Havana since 1980 arrived Wednesday for 2 days of talks aimed at normalizing diplomatic and immigration relations between the former Cold War foes, and the former Soviet Union was Cuba's main patron during the Cold War. So interesting that an intelligence warship from Russia showing up in Havana just before the largest, the largest talks that U.S. and Havana, or the U.S. and Cuba, have had since 1980. I wonder what the capabilities of that warship are, or that intelligence ship. Probably gaining a little bit of insight as to what the meeting is about, if I had to take a wild stab in the dark. 45 churches were torched in Niger, in the capital there, according to the police, in response to demonstrations about the Charlie Hebdo cartoon. 45 churches, as I said, were torched over the weekend in Niger's capital city. during deadly protests over the publication of a Prophet Muhammad cartoon by the French satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo, according to police on Monday. The protest, which left 5 people dead and 128 people injured, also saw a Christian school and an orphanages set alight, according to the National Police Department there. And similar protests on Friday in the second city of Zindur also saw 5 people killed and 45 people wounded. So Niger still, heavily under this whole Islamic cartoon issue, I think, is just going to be going on for a long, long time. And, here some information coming from Germany. The leaders of the German anti-Islam movement, Pegida, plan to hold more rallies in Dresden next month after their latest protest march was banned by police, according to police there, because of a terrorist threat. This group, Pegida, which is the Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West, which is a movement critical of immigration, and they have continued to stage increasingly popular weekly rallies in Dresden despite growing criticism for political leaders, including the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. So again, the fallout from this Charlie Hebdo cartoon and the subsequent reproduction of that cartoon a week later is definitely being used as a dividing line against the populations of many, many communities all around the world. We also saw yesterday, obviously, France outlawing speech that is pro-Palestine. Anybody who would be anti the Charlie Hebdo freedom of speech motif over there now being threatened with arrest, especially if you show up at a rally with a mask on or something like that. Big time fines. So, what's going to be the result of this? Is more divide and conquer? Are we going to see more violence at these protests as they go into the future? Because obviously people in these communities are concerned about the eruption of violence on their streets. People have to be allowed to speak out on both sides. They need to be able to support. That's what the whole freedom of speech thing is about. So I wonder about the Pegida movement, whether or not they are going to actually crack down and continue to outlaw the rallies that are going there. Last week, about 25,000 supporters marched through Dresden after the Paris thing. And Monday's march was banned, as I said, because of a concrete threat against its participants. But Pegida's sympathizers marched on Monday in several other German cities, including Munich, Berlin, Duisburg, Strasbourg, and Leipzig, but were largely outnumbered by counter-demonstrators. So that's the deal here. Even though Pegida says that they are not xenophobic, it does appear that they are anti-Islamic on the front. And, whether or not that's justified or not, that's a debate we can have at a different time. But the fact that there are protests and counter-protests going on with the threat of violence, we're going to see that motif continue to play out as this divide-and-conquer, MO works, essentially. I mean, that's really what it's coming down to. Iran and Hezbollah are apparently planning imminent joint invasion of Israel's North Galilee region, according to high-level intelligence coming out of Israel. This is because a senior Iranian and Hezbollah figures were killed in an airstrike in Syria this weekend, and they were killed, in an airstrike that was carried out by an Israeli helicopter. Okay, an Israeli helicopter fired rockets at a convoy in the Golan Heights region on Sunday. It killed these prominent figures of Hezbollah, military and Iranian military. And then so Israel basically goes on to say that the reason that they suspected that all of those high-level people from Iran and Hezbollah were there was because they're planning some kind of imminent attack again against the Northern Galilee region there. But you got to take this stuff with a grain of salt. This is coming out of Israel. The commander's decision to meet in Syria is being floated by quote unquote high level Israeli intelligence. But when you read the article, what they're actually saying is they're saying that it could mean that a high level and sophisticated attack on Israel's northern border is imminent. It's not necessarily known for sure that that is what's going to happen, but they probably had to come out and say something about the fact that they carried out that airstrike and did take out some pretty senior people. They had to say, well, we had indication that these people were planning an imminent attack, so we had to do what we did, kind of the old do it and then apologize later motif. But anyway, there could potentially be a large attack carried out on Israel from Hezbollah and from Iran. We'll wait to see if that actually happens or not. But Israel has been bombing ISIL inside of Syria. Israel launched its sixth airstrike inside of Syria in the last 18 months in what local media are describing as a targeted killing. This is the one we were talking about, carried out Sunday, killing at least six members of Hezbollah and Iranian Guard members who were fighting with ISIS, al-Nusra, and others in Syria. Among those killed in the missile attack was the son of the former Hezbollah head who was assassinated by the IDF in Damascus in 2008. So again, Israel, Syria, ISIS, the whole, and Iran now being thrown into the mix. Obviously, Iraq is involved. It's just one big cluster. I don't know what else to describe it at this point. Everybody is fighting everybody. People are still trying to overthrow the regime in Syria. And so many strange bedfellows being made here. You could add Turkey into the mix. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous what's going on there, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be going away anytime soon. And then following suit in the reason we mentioned, the fact that there was a potential coup, underway in Yemen. It does appear now, late yesterday that that has actually happened. Houthi fighters, this is according to Reuters, entered Yemeni's presidential palace after a brief clash, with the compound security guards, and witnesses and security sources told Reuters a day after some of the worst battles in the capital in years was, you know, on Tuesday this week. Guards at the presidential palace housing the main office of President Abu Rabu Mansur Hadi said they handed over the compound to Houthi fighters after a brief clash. Witnesses says there had been a brief clash, and with obviously with them and the palace guards. They also say that the Houthis seized armed vehicles and that they had been guarding the entrance to the palace. The Houthis on Monday fought artillery battles with the army near the presidential palace in some of the most intense fighting Sana'a has seen in years, and surrounded the prime minister's residence. So it was after that that we thought there was potentially going to be a coup. Right now, the Wall Street Journal has gone on to add that the whereabouts of the president, Hadi, are currently unknown, as are the number of casualties. But the Houthis are demanding a greater say in the government and in drafting of Yemen's new constitution. They oppose Mr. Hadi's recommendations to the constitution stipulate the division of Yemen into six federal states. So between that and the price of oil still continuing to fall, obviously social instability in the Middle East is still a very, very real issue. Yes, Lex, I completely agree with you. Israeli Secret Intelligence Services is where that ISIS moniker comes from. Also, you can go back and find indications from as early as 1982 of authority figures from inside of Israel talking about the goal of fracturing Iraq into three separate states, which obviously would have been part of the Kurds in the north. And, you know, we can kind of see that ISIS came in with a furious intent, seemingly trying to do exactly that. So I don't know. And then John, for the love of God, McCain has now urged on Monday the deployment of international ground forces to combat jihadists in Syria and Iraq. And he said this on Monday, as I said, when he was touring the Middle East with a Senate delegation. You know, John McCain just wants to arm everybody in the world. I call him John for the love of God McCain because he was the one, remember, that said we needed to get the troops in Kiev vital military equipment. For the love of God, we've got to get them some weapons, people. So that's my new nickname for John McCain. But anyway, the U.S. military is right now planning on sending more troops, about 400 more troops to train Syrian rebels. I think we had this story the other day, and what's interesting is now they're saying 400, and when I did the story the other day, it was 1,000. So I believe there are already 400 troops there, and they're planning on sending an additional 1,000. I wonder if Raw Story here got their data a little mixed up, or maybe they're just trying to fudge the fact that we're still sending people in order to train these quote-unquote moderate Syrian rebels. Anyway, so that's what's going on. John, for the love of God, McCain wants more weapons to fight jihadists in Syria and Iraq, and I would be surprised if he didn't get it. I want to tell this story quickly, too, about Jürgen Todenhofer, who was the first Western reporter to embed with the ISIS state fighters and not be killed in the process. He spoke to Al Jazeera about his time with the terror group and had some pretty startling insights about how violent and how enthusiastic about violence this particular group of people are. He lived side by side with the jihadist fighters for about 10 days in the Islamic State stronghold of Mosul, Iraq, and he was accompanied only by his son, who served as his cameraman. The German reporter elaborated on how shocked he was about how willing to kill the ISIS fighters are. He said that they were ready to commit suicide and genocide. And they were talking about killing hundreds of millions of people. They were very enthusiastic about it, and he says he just could not understand that. He also warned that the Islamic State is much stronger than we think and that their recruiting has brought motivated jihadists from around the globe. Each day, hundreds of new enthusiastic fighters are arriving, explained Todenhofer. And he says their incredible enthusiasm is something he's never seen in a war zone since his time doing war zone coverage. So here's the deal. Why was this guy allowed to come out and tell his story? How is it that he's the only Western reporter that's been able to come out and give PR for the Islamic State? Could it be perhaps that people want there to be more PR out there about the Islamic State? Could it be that we want more fear to be ramped up in the masses? You know, a threat of jihadists in a place where we can't go and verify, threatening to kill hundreds of millions of people enthusiastically. Well, that's pretty scary. That definitely fits into the national dialogue about the ISIS group. And you kind of had to wonder, once you start hearing stuff like that, is it real or is it just more of the show? Kind of have to wonder at this point. What do you guys think? Let me know in the chat room. Let's see here. I have got some more news to get to, but I want to give you guys some heads up on stuff we're going to cover in the news section in the next little segment here after this 3-minute break. Gold has made some pretty surprising moves. I think the ECB has come out with some insight as to exactly what their plan is for quantitative easing. Gold now was way up this morning, not so much right now. We'll see where it looks like when we come back from the break because it's just moving all over. I've also got 5 tech predictions that might actually be worth paying attention to going forward into the future. We've got some health news about a food item that's actually as effective as statins in lowering your cholesterol, and it's something you probably can find in your local grocery store. Oh, and I got to tell this story about this vacuum salesman who was invited to a birthday for a child with autism and absolutely made me cry yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. So all that and more. Tech news, all kinds of stuff. Keep it right here. 3-minute break. Keep you up to date on your daily dose of deep programming, guys. We'll be right back. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp U.S.
USA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hempusa.org.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link
with Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday on True Frequency Radio.
I realize I'm lagging behind in the news section today. So if you go to redpillreports.com and you can go to the show section, it's right there at the top. You'll be able to find out a little bit more information about our guest who will be joining us in about a half an hour, Ralph Winterroad. Definitely going to be an amazing discussion with him. We'll talk about the difference between legality and lawfulness, which I guarantee you a lot of people out there probably don't know about. So do that. And also you'll be able to follow along in that show section with all the news articles that I am probably not going to be able to get to because I ramble way too much, ladies and gentlemen. That's just how it goes. Thank you guys for being in the chat room as well. Appreciate seeing you guys all there. Love that you guys can listen along with the show at the same time as we're chatting back and forth. It's just nice to have a little bit of feedback. Okay, I'm going to hop back into the news, and we're going to shotgun this thing here real quick. So come back into some international news real quick. I just want to point out that the U.S. Department of Defense has also declared a number of new airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq. The statement cited that compiled from Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve news releases. So according to this Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve news release, the U.S. coalition and military have continued to attack Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant terrorists in Syria and Iraq in the recent days. They have launched a series of airstrikes both in Syria and Iraq, and it has not subsided. We talked a little bit earlier in the week about all the attacks that went on, or all the airstrikes that went on over the weekend, but just letting you guys know, it's still continuing up until 8 o'clock this morning. So there you go. And also, Ukraine came out today, Poroshenko, saying that Ukraine may abandon Russian gas in the next 2 years, which obviously, if you've been following events in the Ukraine closely like we have, does not surprise anybody at all. Poroshenko obviously put into power in Kiev by the United States and NATO, and obviously a lot of people may not know, maybe it's not obvious to you guys, but Ukraine has got the second or third largest shale reserves in the world. Obviously, interesting tidbit that Joe Biden's son, now on the board of directors of one of the largest gas-producing agencies there in Ukraine. Probably a coincidence, right? But anyway, Kiev obviously trying to do everything they possibly can to get out from underneath the need to be purchasing so much fuel and oil from Russia. So obviously it has to do with why they took over the country and why that Joe Biden's son is working there now. So that's what's going on there. Probably, Poroshenko moving in that direction is not a surprise to anybody here listening to this program. So let's move on to some national news. A couple of tragic events that we need to talk about. A cardiac surgeon was shot at Brigham and Women's Hospital. He actually passed away this morning after being shot. The doctor identified as 44-year-old Michael Davidson. He was shot twice in the Shapiro Building, where the cardiovascular unit is located. He suffered life-threatening injuries and was later pronounced dead. It's difficult to say, but the shooter took his own life with a pistol. They recovered that. It happened, on premises there. Obviously, there's no metal detectors at that hospital, so they're obviously looking into doing that now. But the main motive that seems to be coming out of this is that the treatment by this doctor of the shooter's mother apparently infuriated this guy who was named Stephen Presseri. He's of Millbury. He's 55 years old. Infuriated him enough that he wanted to go shoot this cardiac surgeon. So possibly a case of, mental instability or something like that. But again, just a reminder, stay on your toes out there. You never know when somebody is just going to go off the cuff or, do something crazy. So, Let's see here, too. There was also another tragic story. I'm just going to get to the tragic stuff and get it out of the way. Normally, I would skip over stuff like this because I don't like to dwell in horrible, horrible things. But this case is still open, and I think people need to know about it because, well, we need to try and bring these people to justice. This story is coming out of California. A homeless man is now being treated for second and third degree burns after three white males with shaved heads reportedly used lighter fluid and set him on fire while he was sleeping on a California beach. It's obviously tragic and absolutely inexcusable. But the 58-year-old John Frazier, covered in flames, 5 to 6 feet high at about 11 o'clock at night on Saturday, and a Good Samaritan used sand from the beach to put him out and then called 911. Now, the suspects, described by detectives as three white males in their late teens or early 20s with shaved heads, Ventura Police Department is urging anybody with information about this crime to contact them. So if you're in Ventura County there and you have insight about who might have done something this absolutely barbaric, I would highly recommend that you call and turn these idiots in, because that is inexcusable, in my opinion. So there you go. St. Anne Police Department, a community I used to live in St. Louis, has now come out and apologized for arresting and beating up pretty badly a college student after they admitted to causing severe injuries to his face and accusing him of a crime he did not commit on Thursday. Police were in pursuit of a gentleman named Anton Simmons, who had 17 arrest warrants out for his name, when 22-year-old Joseph Swink crashed his car trying to avoid the police pursuit on Interstate 70. Now, Swink is an accounting student at UMSL with no criminal record and was on his way home from an internship when he was accidentally involved with this pursuit. Police say they were able to get him into custody using the least amount of force necessary, but when you see the pictures of his face, you kind of have to wonder about that. But when they finally had him in handcuffs on the ground, they heard on the radio that the real suspect was actually already in custody at a different location, and Swink suffered severe damage to his ear, and his vehicle was totaled in the process. But the chief of police there in St. Anne did come out and apologize. So, you know, what that does for you after your car is totaled and your face looks like hamburger, I don't really know. But at least they did, you know, come out and apologize, which I guess is a good thing. So, St. Anne Police Department, man, you got to wonder about those people. You also have to wonder about this Christopher Lee Cornell guy again, too. We talked about this last week. He was the guy that was supposedly, he was arrested, but arrested for supposedly plotting to attack the Capitol with pipe bombs and then to shoot government officials as they fled the building. His dad was in the news late last week saying that, you know, obviously this is a setup. This kid doesn't have the wherewithal to put something like this together, and there's a lot of strong indications that he had met with FBI informants. But his father, again, coming out in the news right now, telling various media outlets that his son was absolutely set up by the FBI. So is he correct? Well, it's pretty possible that his son was in fact set up by the FBI, because keeping in mind that Cornell purchased two AR-15s and 600 rounds of ammo before he was arrested in a parking lot of a gun store in Cincinnati. His father says that Christopher worked seasonal minimum wage jobs and had only saved about $1,200. The guns and ammo purchased at the store were worth more than $1,800. So again, where did he get that money? There's plenty of examples of the FBI nurturing events into existence and then claiming to have foiled them. Plenty of them in this article that I won't go through, but there was an investigation in 2011 that showed more than 500 times after 9/11, the government has arrested and charged similar suspects that they have nurtured into trying to do something, you know, awful. And in 158 of those cases, an informant was involved. And in 49 of those cases, the informant was the one who proposed the act of terror and then coordinated the plot. So there you go. You know, 49 times since 9/11, we can say definitively that the IRS has used an informant and nurtured somebody who, you know, otherwise probably wouldn't have had the wherewithal to go out and decide to hatch some great plan to destroy, you know, government buildings or people. But there you go. That's, you know, I fully believe that was another nurtured event. I don't know what else to describe it. I think that the FBI has got to try and do what they can to keep that fear meter pegged so they can come out and pretend to foil these plots all the time. Anyway, NYPD officers right now being investigated by the Brooklyn DA's office because apparently there has been a habit of placing guns, planting guns on innocent people in order to arrest them for illegal firearm possession. So the Brooklyn District Attorney Ken Thompson announced the investigation after prosecutors were forced to drop a weapons case involving a man accused of having a gun outside of his Brooklyn apartment. The probe will later focus on allegations that police officers have been planting guns on innocent people. The man in question in the particular case, which brought this all to light, was 53-year-old Jeffrey Herring. He was arrested last year by officers from the 67th Precinct in East Flatbush. Police said they had a tip from a confidential informant stating that someone had a gun, and Herring matched the description of the man, and a gun was found at the location reported by the informant. However, the gun was found in a plastic bag with no traces of the suspect's fingerprints, and the charges were subsequently dropped when police were unable to bring the informant to court despite a judge's order that he or she appeared. And Herring had maintained his innocence for more than a year and a half. So it's obviously good news for Mr. Herring that his case is, his case was dropped. But now, more investigation into crooked actions of police officers from around the world. I don't think it's surprising really to anybody, given everything that that we learn all the time about these guys, smuggling drugs or trafficking people, doing things like that. But anyway, moving on, let's get into some economic news. The Dow really has been flat for the last couple days. We're up right now about 38 points, which really, you could say is pretty flat, I would imagine. Let's see, oil is not trading currently. Not really sure why. $46.39 for oil. Let's see where gold is at. It had made a pretty strong move above the $1,300 mark. I saw it at $1,302 this morning. It has pulled back pretty significantly. We're still at about $1,288 right now, just under $1,289. But still about $100 up over the last couple of weeks. That's a pretty substantial move. And those of us holding gold are definitely excited about that. Now, you have to ask, is that gold going up in value, or is that people recognizing that the dollar and the euro don't really have as much value as has been purported to us? I wonder. Bitcoin right now sitting at $213.74 big pennies. Bitcoin kind of been up and down over the last couple of weeks, and there has been a large Bitcoin style ETF that has been announced. So we'll see if that does anything to bolster the prices. The IMF has lowered the global growth forecast by the most in 3 years. They made the steepest cuts to the global growth outlook in the last 3 years, which diminish expectations almost everywhere except for the U.S., more than offsetting the boost to expansion from lower oil prices. The world economy will grow 3.5% in 2015, down from the 3.8% pace projected in October, according to the International Monetary Fund. It said this in its quarterly global outlook, which was released late Monday in Washington. And the Washington-based lender also cut its estimate for growth next year to 3.7% compared to the projection of 4% in October. The weakness, along with prolonged below-target inflation, is challenging policymakers across Europe and Asia to come up with fresh ways to stimulate demand more than 6 years after the global financial crisis. Central bankers and government officials, including the Bank of England Governor Mark Carney and the Bank of Japan's Kuroda, may talk about options when they convene this week at the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos, Switzerland. I believe that meeting is currently going on right now, and I believe that there are a lot of people there freaking out. Guaranteed. They had the largest turnout for an event like this that they have had ever. 1,700 private planes flying into Switzerland over the week today. And the ECB now finally coming out, well, sort of. There has been some conjecture, over the last few weeks about the European Central Bank administering a healthy dose of quantitative easing, and obviously the markets have been kind of waiting to see whether or not that was actually going to happen or not. But now, the European Central Bank Executive Board has proposed quantitative easing of 50 billion euros a month until the end of 2016, which is a two-euro era central bank official said. So two-euro area central bankers, on the condition of anonymity, have said now that this is the proposal that is being floated around at the European Central Bank. So they're going to be discussing it today. Again, the ECB decision-making governing council, which could still change the decision pretty significantly, according to these people that, again, don't want to be identified. And the purchases of these of the bonds will not begin until the 1st of March, according to one of these people. And the ECB spokesman officials declined to comment. But the proposal to inject as much as 1.1 trillion euros reflects President Draghi's determination to expand the ECB's balance sheet and to stave off the threat of deflation. and put the 19-nation economy back on the path to health. He'll announce the governing council's final decision at a press conference in Frankfurt tomorrow. So I would expect, because this article was written yesterday, that we will get an official announcement. And I imagine then that we'll see some moves in the market. Just as a reminder about gold, too, gold on Monday consolidated the recent gains sparked by safe haven buying from the Switzerland fallout, right? And also the interest rate move in Switzerland. So the fallout from the collapse of the price of oil and the rampant dollar all having a major effect on gold over the week. And in light trade on the New York Mercantile Exchange, due to the public holiday on the U.S., gold futures advanced about $12 an ounce from Friday's close to trade at about $12.77 an ounce. This is the highest since early September. So, again, it's not just the physical market where people are clamoring and the price is going up, but it's also in the ETF market. So the last week, the metals actually gained more than 5% and is now trading up more than $90 just for the year of 2015 so far. Again, we're only 3 weeks into 2015. And we're up $90 in the gold market. I would imagine we might see some profit taking. Seems like it's pretty likely. A lot of people might decide to take some profit. But I don't think we're going to see gold falling down to where it was again. That's just my own personal feeling on this. It feels like there's a lot of jitters in the market right now. And a lot of people, given the fact that the Swiss National Bank could make a move like it did without really indicating to anybody that it was going to, a lot of people are probably hedging their bets right now, just trying to make sure that they have everything that they need, you know, just in case. And I think gold is going to be part of that plan going forward. We always recommend people have physical gold. We're super, super big fans of carat bars. I hope you guys have looked at the carat bars link. That's a way that you can get gold for free, ladies and gentlemen. It's not too big a deal. They are an outstanding company out of Germany. And I have many, 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 many single grams of gold sitting around ready for the day that I need them. And love watching the value of the gold go up. Makes me very happy. Let's see here. Let's move on to some tech news right now. There's a lot of goofy stuff going on. we'll talk about five tech tips that might likely come true in the next year. Obviously, you know, January's old and gone here. So we're just about to February, moving through the old 2015 here pretty quick. But there is a list of predictions that comes out from GP Bullhound. So they're a boutique investment bank. They specialize in tech companies. And every year they do a listing of the predictions that they made from 2014, which were successful, and also predictions for going forward into the new year. They were pretty much 10 for 10 for 2014. So I decided maybe it'd be a good idea to look at some of the things that they think we should be paying attention to in the tech realm going forward. They say 1,000 Ubers will bloom. I don't even know what Uber is. That's how non-techy I am when it comes to Uber and Airbnb. But people are saying that services like those are going to proliferate. So if there's potential to invest in things like that, that might be a good thing to go. Smart devices going to become intelligent this year. That's kind of a scary deal. They say wearable devices like Fitbit and Jawbone are great at tracking real-world activity and turning that data, but they require too much hand-holding from consumers to make them intelligent. New devices will be context-aware and will have context-aware applications that automatically collect data from multiple sources, learn, and make recommendations. So again, your smart devices are going to become more intelligent going forward, probably a little bit scary for some of us out there. Payments. We'll see the biggest changes since credit cards this year. A lot of bold predictions are going on here right now. So the use of cash and plastic predicted to decline. Apple Pay will launch in Europe. Sellers of point-to-sale hardware will also be battling that. A major payment giant, Visa, Amex, MasterCard, will probably buy up a challenger. Social networks will integrate buy buttons widely, and a major global bank will start accepting cryptocurrency transfers and payments. And, of course, these are all predictions going forward from this boutique investment firm. But very interesting that they're picking out some of these things. Social networks getting buy buttons. That's pretty interesting. New media will take off. Good storytelling and better editorial styles are returning thanks to a spat of new publications that have captured the imagination of younger readers. And those younger readers are accustomed to finding content through social and mobile sources. So they think that new media will be more focused on platforms like Instagram, YouTube, Vine, things like that. And these ongoing trends lead GP Bullhound to expect a surge of global interest in the creation and acquisition of new media brands in 2015. They also predict that mobile gaming will be even more addictive going forward into the next year. I think if you're over the age of 30 and you still have a video game system, you should be stripped of your right to vote. Just a little throwing that out there. Just planting seeds. If you're wasting that much time doing nothing, I'd rather you not guide our country. Thanks. Elon Musk on January 16th said that SpaceX has now submitted to international regulators the necessary documentation for a global satellite internet project to eventually include some 4,000 satellites in low Earth orbit and initially service within 5 years. Very interesting. So he said Hawthorne, California-based SpaceX would not be pursuing a stock market listing for many years, given the volatility of the launch service market also. So committing to staying private in that speech as well. He did not provide a name for the satellite project, and there is no immediate way to verify what he or SpaceX has actually submitted to the International Telecommunication Union, which is the Geneva-based United Nations agency that regulates orbital slots and radio spectrums. It's also unclear what radio frequencies the SpaceX network would be using to deliver the broadband from low Earth orbit. Well, I don't know why they write these articles with those words that are so hard to say together right next to each other. I mean, come on, guys. Jeez Louise. But they also says SpaceX entering the satellite production business with a new plant based in Seattle, in part because there's more money associated with satellite manufacturing than with the space launch services. So very cool, Elon Musk expanding. I don't know how you guys feel about having internet beamed down on you. I think, a lot of the health people out there would probably be fairly concerned about that. But at the same time, decentralizing information, it's such a hard moral battle that I'd have to fight when I tried to figure out which way I went on that one. I don't know. What do you guys think? Tell me in the chat room. Also, and this is kind of some crazy technology. I'm not really excited about this, but there's a new police radar system that can see inside your houses, and apparently it's been being used by at least 50 different law enforcement agencies for the last 2 years. This is a report coming from USA Today saying that those agencies, including the FBI and the U.S. Marshals Service, began deploying the radar systems more than 2 years ago with little notice to the courts and no public disclosure about when or how they would be used. The technology obviously raises legal and privacy issues because the United States Supreme Court has said officers generally cannot use high-tech sensors to tell them about the inside of a person's home without first obtaining a search warrant. These radars work like finely tuned motion detectors, using radio waves to zero in on movements as slight as human breathing from a distance of more than 50 feet. They can detect whether or not anyone is inside of a house and whether or not they are moving. This is absolutely crazy, draconian, I mean, scary, scary stuff. And the fact that they're doing it without any public notification or public scrutiny is even more concerning. But that's what's going on right now. Police officers and police departments around the world, or around the United States at least, gaining this new super high-tech radar that lets them peer through your walls and figure out what you're doing. Obviously violating all kinds of our protected rights, but nobody cares about that, really. So there you go. There's also a new project right now. A gentleman is working on 3D production of homes using mud. And I really like this. I've always wanted an earth-rammed home or an earth-sheltered home. But this gentleman has come up with a program based on mud daubers, a type of wasp. This guy's name is Massimo Moridi, and he's managed to develop new 3D printing technology for creating cheap houses. He's working with architects. He developed a bioarchitecture, which may go a long way, obviously, in fighting towards fighting the housing crisis in some parts of the world. But I think the idea of building homes out of mud is a fantastic idea. Anyway, right now they're doing small-scale productions, but they are planning to develop a full-size, three-arm, 20-foot-tall, portable 3D printer capable of printing structures as high as 10 feet, which could then be hauled to a site by truck and assembled in a couple of hours. The beauty about being able to build a home like this is that it's quick, it's super-duper hyper-local. I mean, you're taking mud directly from the ground, and it's essentially free, minus the energy to run the machine, and they could actually build a home in a matter of like a week. And it'd be super solid. I mean, I love that idea. I love it. I hope that blows up all over the world. Let's see here. I'm moving into some health news because I think I promised that. A new study about consuming alcohol. Do you guys consume alcohol out there? You have, any kind of idea about whether or not it's safe? Well, a new report has now come out saying consuming up to seven alcoholic drinks a week gives men a 20% lower risk of developing heart failure when compared to men who abstain and a 16% reduced risk for women, according to, again, a major new study. A team of U.S. researchers analyzed data from more than 14,000 people aged between 45 and 64 years who had taken part in the osteosclerosis risk in community study between 87 and 89 back in America, and they followed the participants for a quarter century until the end of 2011, questioned them about their alcohol consumption. The participants were divided into six basic categories, from abstainers to people who drank more than 21 drinks a week. And then they, researchers, just to clarify, defined a drink as one that contains 14 grams of alcohol. So that's equivalent to one small glass of wine, a little over a half pint of beer, or a little less than one shot of liquor. And then during the follow-up period, some 1,271 men and 1,237 women developed heart failure. And after taking account of various factors that could affect the results, age, BMI, diabetes, blood pressure, heart disease, blah, 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 whole kinds of things, it became very apparent that the lowest rate of heart failure occurred in those drinking up to 7 drinks per week, and the highest rate was actually in those people who were former drinkers, not people who abstained forever, but people who used to drink and then quit. That's very interesting. So these findings sort of suggest that drinking alcohol in moderation does not contribute to an increased risk of heart failure and may even be protective. So that's, again, coming from a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. So one glass a day, ladies and gentlemen, probably not that bad, probably not that bad. So that's good to know. For those of us out here who may or may not like our wine. What else is going on? Probably important to note here that a tomato can be just as effective as statin drugs against LDL cholesterol, or an effective in terms of reducing LDL cholesterol by about 10%. Researchers found that about 25 milligrams of lycopene, which is the carotenoid found in tomatoes, is effective at reducing LDL cholesterol by about 10%, which is the same effectiveness as most statin drugs, right? So how many tomatoes do you have to eat to get your 25 milligrams of lycopene? How about 6 ounces of tomato juice daily? How about that? Maybe try that instead of getting on the old statin drugs that mess up your brain and possibly cause all kinds of ancillary effects that would be bad for you. Anyway, lots more health news. I didn't get to get to it. Magnesium, super duper important. Make sure you guys are getting your magnesium out there. That's one of those things that everybody is deficient. If you're asking yourself, hey, am I deficient in magnesium? The answer is yes. Ladies and gentlemen, take Epsom salt baths. Get yourself some magnesium oil. I love it. Help you fall asleep. It is so relaxing. It is so important for your body. More health news, redpillreports.com. Check out the sections there under the show section. We're going to be right back with Ralph Winterroad. Definitely looking forward to this. Get all your friends and family, get around the warm glow of the computer, and we will learn about the difference between legalness and lawfulness. Keep it right here, guys, your daily dose of deep.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest-growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. So we are experiencing the beauty of live radio right now, ladies and gentlemen. So having a little trouble getting in touch with Mr. Winter Road. So I'm hoping that my producer can reach out to him via phone and we'll see if we can't get him to join the conversation here. We were going to have a conversation about the legal system and things like that. But for just a few minutes, I think we'll probably just bounce back to the news. You guys will have to bear with me here for just a second as I get some news articles back up in front of me here. Hope you guys are having a good day out there. It's beautiful in Missouri right now, which is kind of a rarity, but especially for the winter time that we've got here going on. Let's see here. Appreciate everybody being in the chat room. I'm going to probably just go ahead and open up the phone lines here in a few minutes for anybody who wants to call in and discuss anything at all that's going on in the news. I haven't had any phone calls to the show yet. I've been on the air for a couple of months and again would love it if somebody wanted to call in and just have a discussion about anything that is going on in the news right now. And again, in the chat room once again, so if you guys are in there, I'll be there as well. The phone lines, if you do want to call in, is 866-37-TRUTH. You can also dial 866-378-7884 if you aren't one of those people that can spell with your phone. I'm one of those people that can't spell with my phone as well. So, yeah, let's move back into some news. There's plenty of things to talk about here. Let me, I'm having a little trouble getting it up here, guys. Just bear with me here for just a second. Let's see what else we can talk about. Let's see here. Kind of already went over some of the tragic stories from around the nation. Oh, you know what I didn't get to talk about, which I really want to talk about, was this story about the birthday party. And I gotta tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this one really touched my heart. There's a video about it. It's also down in the weird, funny, and good news. That's kind of where I stick stuff in the news section, that I don't know where else it's supposed to go, or things that touch your heart. Sometimes you need to have a little bit of good, you know, a little bit of humanity to kind of remind us that, that we're not all completely, you know, alone out there. But anyway, so what are we talking about? We're talking about a story where a woman has a son. Her son is 14 years old and he is autistic. And I have to tell you guys, you know, I have an autistic brother and they can be kind of obsessive about things. Once they kind of get it into their mind, that they want to, be involved with something, that's usually how it goes. Well, hearing some phone chatter here, that might be a good sign. But anyway, so this autistic child, 14 years old, very obsessed about vacuum cleaners. That's kind of his name of his game is vacuum cleaners, right? And he's watched every video about every vacuum cleaner ever made. And so the mom thought, you know, it would be really cool if she could reach out to the Kirby company. The Kirby makes very expensive, you know, widely known, you know, vacuum cleaners from around the world, and wanted to have an in-home demonstration, right? Thought this child would really, really enjoy seeing a vacuum broken down. And so
yeah, I'm on the Skype now.
Oh, we've got Ralph on. Okay, Ralph, hang on just one second. I can hear you. Let me just finish telling this quick story, and then we'll get on to our interview here real quick. But anyway, long story short, ladies and gentlemen, is that this mother wrote a letter to the Kirby organization. A Kirby salesman did, in fact, show up and absolutely made this child's day and ended up giving him a brand new Kirby vacuum, which I know maybe all of us out here would be like, what the heck? But this kid's cake even had a vacuum on it. That's how impressed with vacuums this young man is. He's completely impressed. So how great is that, that the Kirby Corporation came and did that for him? I just thought that was really neat, and showing up and making such a big difference in a young man's life like that. Very, very cool. Okay, moving on here. Into the second hour of our broadcast today. This is typically the time when we have a guest come on, and it does sound like now we do have Mr. Winterode on the show. I want to first thank you, Ralph Winterode, for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today, sir.
Well, thanks for having me here. Golly, I was up super late last night. I slept in.
Hey, it happens, man. It happens. And if I could sleep in, believe me, I would have. I try and get up by 7 every day against my better judgment. But anyway, we're very excited to have you here. A lot of people listening to the Red Pill Reports know that one of the main staples of our conversation here is about the difference between legality and lawfulness, and about the the complete corruption of our legal system, and also some of the organizations that are complicit in that, the IRS, the CPS. You know, there's just so many criminal elements to this organization. And I wanted to get into your story because it is so important. But I wanted, if you could, for people out there who don't know you, if you could just kind of tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this fight, because you really are kind of at the forefront of the fight against injustice and the fight for truth. But I imagine after reading your story that that was not really your ambition. You seem to be one of these people that kind of got forced into a corner and decided to go ahead and just say, I'm going to fight these guys. So could you tell us your story if you would, sir?
Sure. Dan Metter, he was a legal researcher, and I got to know him and his group in the IRS. And one of the things that really got me going is, I met Joyce Riley, and, she has stage 4 cancer right now, on the Gulf War syndrome.
Right.
And I saw what they were doing to our veterans. And I looked at all this evidence, and I could not believe what they were doing to him. And our Senator Murkowski up here was knee deep in it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I looked at all of her evidence, and I actually flew them up. I went to UAA, flew in our politicians, and flew in a doctor from Oklahoma at it, and the guy that was a Camasea. He was in the military. He was there. His wife got it. He got it. His dogs got it. His children got it. And dogs died from it. And Joyce Riley. And, you know, we had 20 of those politicians. I gave every politician. Back then I had a business, a good business. I was grossing $2 million. And 20 of them showed up, and 20 of them, not one of them stayed for the whole thing.
Really?
This is firsthand knowledge of what they were testing on them and not give them doxycycline. And France is the only country that walked away without any problems. Hmm. That whole thing. But we had, I didn't even know, came out with fibromyalgia, all sorts of illnesses that they got from this stuff. And I funded the first video because I had money back then, and made an enemy of the Department of Defense, and the person that did the video, they deported him. They went after Joyce, and then they went after me. Hmm. They're mean people, boy, I'm telling you.
Oh, I believe it.
Anyway, they eventually got my business. You know, they got me decorated. That's another story. But anyway, so I got involved with that. And then the same thing with the stand, with the Metter, I got involved with the IRS.
Okay.
Quit filing in 1995 in my business. And, then they left me alone, and I started to evils that they were doing, and then I kept researching it, and I found that, you know what, there is no known legal duty to file. And I said, what is going on here? How can it be this corrupt? And so anyway, I spent a lot of time researching that, especially since 2001 when my business closed. Mm-hmm. And in the process, I've been involved with Dave Gladden's fight in Dillingham, and I've been going after the courts trying to figure out why we don't have any have access to the highest level of Westlaw. So anyway, last year, to get to the culmination of this, conclusively proved that Alaska has no judicial system at all. It was totally taken over by the Alaska Bar in 1974. They changed the name of the courts. They changed the jurisdiction. They changed the venue. There's not one judge in Alaska has an oath of office as a public officer. There's not one who has a civil commission. There's never been appointed to anybody. And we even got Vanessa White out here in Palmer to admit it. She put it in an order. Said, I'm an undersigned jurist.
An undersigned jurist.
Undersigned jurist. That's what she said. That's it. What, everything else is irrelevant.
What is an undersigned jurist? I've never even heard that term before.
Undersigned jurist is somebody that has a law degree and signs legal documents at the bottom. That's exactly what she does. She has a Rule 5 oath of attorney. She's bound to the Alaska Bar. Mm-hmm. And she has a Rule 65 affidavit. And these attorneys in Alaska can't even go in a constitutional court.
Right, right.
But none of them exist. So anyway, in the process with the IRS, in this whole thing, while I was researching automobiles, and last year I conclusively proved, well, actually it's been 2 years ago, that we don't own automobiles. We know now we're in Alaska where to go to get a copy of the MSO. And the original commercial document is taken over to DMV. It's given to them, and they collateralize it. Mm-hmm. That part I haven't proven yet, but I know that's what they're doing. So I'm going to be taking those folks on this year because they're stealing property. In Alaska, it's in the Constitution. We don't own our land. We're just land. It's unbelievable. In a government-owned land, and they put it right in the Constitution, and the people have no idea what's going on. So we're just squatters.
Right.
But the main thing that I've been really pushing on is this IRS. And we finally, in August, got access to the highest level of Westlaw into, so we can get, I have access now to the Chief Counsel Notice and Mertens, M-E-R-T-E-N-S, and Casey's Law and stuff, and found that the Chief Law Officer for the IRS, which is the, he puts out Chief Counsel Notices. And people that are what they call non-filers are people that, he says, well, we have to put out three forms. Well, they put out those three forms. It's a form 4549, and it's supposed to be signed. They don't ever sign them. They just put the, type the name in occasionally, a form 886-A. And that's they're supposed to get around and say how they arrived at what they think they're going to do the notice of deficiency on. Mm-hmm. And a form 13496. And the one form 13496, you don't all, never see it because in the Internal Revenue Manual they say don't show that to the taxpayer.
Ah.
Well, even if you do, it is only under the authority of delegation orders, so it's all smoke and mirrors. So we put this in McAlpine. He's somebody in North Carolina that has allowed his name to be out there. And there was a letter sent to an agent, Allen, on books and records. Days after they got the letter, just a letter. No, this case, there's an open case. Mm-hmm. They withdrew. They withdrew the whole case.
Really?
And three documented times with Allen, they did not, said, she said, did not come in for books and records. And so we didn't, you know, or he didn't. And I'm not an attorney or counselor. We should put that out. I just provide research material to people.
Yes.
But anyway, so we won that case, and I've got several other that I'm providing research material on now where they're doing reduced to judgments. Because people do not understand the real problem with what's going on. One of the major problems in America, and FDR came up against this with this new deal, is called the Headless Fourth Branch of Government. And that is a name that came from, in 1937, the government's research that FDR done because agencies were using regulations to run away with his executive power. Mm-hmm. And this is what they're doing. They promulgate regulations that have no force and effect of law. And so he started the process, and the Logan Act in 1940 didn't make it because it didn't go far enough. And anyway, the Trumans end up signing it, but it's called the Administrative Procedures Act that was specifically put in so that we would know how these agencies, when they make a regulation, force and effect of law, it must be put into the Federal Register. It It's under 5 USC 550B, 3B. They must allow us comment periods, and they're supposed, that's a proposed, it's supposed to come back. And then they have to say again in there that it's under 5 USC 553B. We're supposed to address the, all the comments, and they're supposed to wait 30 days. Do you know how many agencies that I've seen that have a, what's called a subsidy or substantive regulation today?
I don't even know what that is, so I'm going to say none.
There you go. Well, how did you get, IRS openly states it?
Right.
The federal, Federal Reserve openly says we're not doing it. The EPA is by the way, the Federal Register, the Federal Reserve, it's called external establishment. It means these things are many governments. They sit outside of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. This in the congressional record. If anybody wants that, send me an email at ralph@alaskaminuteman.com. I will send you some shocking material done by our government telling us that we have a headless fourth branch of government and that these people are sitting outside government and there's nothing we basically can do about it if you do not know how what's called the headless fourth branch of government works. Hmm. And this is what I've been doing now. It's amazing. The Constitution is almost like water off a duck's back when you use it against an agency.
Right.
But if you use the Administrative Procedures Act, because that's the world that they live in, they will pay attention to it. Now, it's unbelievable. It's totally illogical. But anyway, we've got the first win ever where they totally walked away from enforcement of administrative summons. And we've got one case that I'm inviting research in the 10 that I'm talking about. Has never been adjudicated in any of the courts because, you see, the attorneys, the few that know about it, won't go there. And we, the peasants, how would we know? How would you know that there are three forms, the chief counsel notice says, for a non-filer or a substitute for return under 6020? How would you know that? You wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't know it exists.
Right, exactly.
So our remedy, and then to take this one step farther, this is getting to be fun this year. Because, oh, it is. Because we got Agent Allen in North Carolina lying, so we're going to put in for sanctions on that. But what's more is our whole republic, our whole life is built on what? Being accountable.
Yes.
If you cannot hold the people that we have given a limited delegation of power accountable, just like Obama, he's just totally running. He just does whatever he wants because nobody's holding him accountable.
Yep.
And until Congress gets, of course, they're so corrupt up there, everybody, basically, most of them are bought and paid for, not all of them. You can't say that for anybody, for all of them, of course. But until you hold people accountable, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to act like kings or monarchs or dictators, and they're going to rule over us big time. And that's what's going on. Well, in the IRS, under 7433 is a code section. We have an administrative remedy. We have to exhaust our administrative remedy in this headless fourth branch of government before we can go and hold the IRS accountable. So there are 8 area directors is what it looks like now.
Okay.
Well, you think you just go to the IRS homepage or you call up your senator or representative or call up an IRS and get the names, addresses of those people?
No, of course not.
No, so how do I have an administrative remedy if I can't even, I got a whole quiver full of arrows I want to shoot at area directors now.
But they've hidden all the targets. Yeah, they've hidden all the targets.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, this week, the last time I spent 4.5 hours all morning and I finally got to a live party and I got through and identified 3 of these area directors. So we're going to start going in. What the process is now, when the agent is outside the procedures and the regulations, then we know now how to articulate that, and we know what it is because that's not taught either. I mean, we don't know any of this stuff. We're like second graders, you know, and we're trying up against somebody that's in college.
Right.
So anyway, we know the rules and regulations. So now we complain to the area director about the agent. They have up to 6 months to respond. You make sure that the agent knows before you go there that you're screwing up because, oh, it was neglect. I didn't know that. You know, okay, well, been certified. Okay, then they got up to 6 months to respond.
Okay.
Neglect. Then after 6 months, you can go to the United States District Court, which, by the way, is not a constitutional court. That we lost our constitutional federal courts in 1948. So anyway, then we can go and we can sue up to $1 million. Now we're going to get their attention. Finally. Because this is what this whole thing is. My business closed down in 2001. I was grossing $2 million a year and growing every year. And that was the last year that I could keep and I had to close it down. But that's fine. I don't have any regrets because what they were doing to our veterans, depleted uranium, they're still, you know, screwing with their vets. They don't give a, they're just an asset, this disposable asset. They don't care about the people out there that's over there fighting these crazy wars. They ain't even really wars that we don't want to win.
Yep, absolutely.
So anyway, excuse me. And, I have a clip here. You can probably hear that too. That is really, says it all, and it's done by, Alan Greenspan. He's the guy that's the head of the Federal Reserve.
Right.
And this basically says it all. Now, we have the Social Security went to an external establishment in 1994. The EPA is external establishment. They don't make any rules that have – they just make rules that have no force and effect of law behind them.
Exactly.
The Real ID Act has no regulations, and Congress is in on a lot of this because they actually tell the agencies, don't worry about promulgating it to, in the Federal Register, which nobody knows has access. I mean, it's on the internet, but nobody knows what to look for even if you went there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bother about this force and effect. Just go do whatever you want because nobody understands anymore. They really don't. They don't. I mean, the people do not know the administrative law. They do not teach administrative law to police.
They don't even teach us language correctly anymore. I mean, I've been studying contract law for about 10 years now, and until someone physically put a Black's Law Dictionary in front of me, I literally had no idea what any of these lawyer idiots were saying to me, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is, and I think it'll play over the radio here. Listen to this. This is.
What is the proper relationship? What should be the proper relationship between a chairman of the Fed and a president of the United States?
Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency, and that means basically that there is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take. So long as that is in place, and there is no evidence that the administration or the Congress or anybody else is requesting that we do things other than what we think is the appropriate thing, then what the relationships are don't frankly matter. And I've had very good relationships with presidents.
There you go.
I mean, seriously, as long as that status quo stays the way it is, the relationships just don't matter.
Hold on just a minute here. I gotta hold on just a minute.
Music. I just happened to be in that.
Yep. Isn't that scary?
Oh, it's frightening that they put that stuff on C-SPAN because nobody pays attention to C-SPAN either. I mean, it's like the head of the IRS coming out. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, but I've got a clip of him saying all taxation is voluntary. It was on C-SPAN. I was like, I have it on tape. The guy head of the IRS saying taxation is voluntary. So anybody comes to me now, I just say, go to the tape, you know?
Well, it is, but, you know, you can't win with that. It's really difficult. It seems ridiculous. But and now, if even more ridiculous, you go to the Internal Revenue Service. They don't even answer the phone anymore since the first of the year. You call now, and all you do is get recordings. Come
right
on down, and we want to see your smiling face. You walk into the Internal Revenue Service office. You say, okay, I want to see your pamphlets. Pamphlets have no force and effect of law. The courts have said they can flat out lie in pamphlets. So why would I want to look at something that has no bearing and you can lie, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll go to what's called Part 601 regulations. Those are procedure. Those are their supposed internal procedure. We have no defense. They can lie. They regs. They say they're going to put in interpretive regs. They're going to say they're going to do this. They're going to do that. They do not have to do it. Flat out lie and not do it, and we have no remedy in the courts. So the 601 regs, well then, okay, it sounds like Obama and Obamacare. Yeah, you can keep your doctor and all that. Right?
Yeah, if you like your doctor, you keep your doctor.
Okay, then we have what's called Part 301 regs, which are called housekeeping regs. And that's Chrysler B. Brown 441 U.S. 281. That's a 1979 holding of the Supreme Court of the United States. Many times been cited. Interpretive regs, they're Part 301. These lawyers use housekeeping regs, and what they say is, well, we'll give it deference, which means we will look at it if the statute is unambiguous. The statutes are not unambiguous. In Title 26, which is the Internal Revenue Code, there are over 1,000 code sections where they say the term, and then in quotation mark, like withholding agent, end quote, means, when they say that, that when Congress says that, the courts are done. The IRS does not use terms. They use what's called subjective, touchy feeling. This is what Obama, all these people stuff, you can't win, because if you do not have something defined to what it really means, how do you win an argument? And in the law, how do you understand if you are violating the law or not?
Yeah.
And the IRS uses things like federal tax liability, federal income tax. None of those things have any meaning to find.
Right.
Now what they don't tell us is when they say federal income, there are what's called subtitles. There is subtitle A, which is part one, and that means it's 26 United States. And it'll be 1 point something. So it'll have a one in front of it. That's why it's called part one. A, which is income taxes. Mm-hmm. There is a subtitle B, which is gifts and estate. That is a what's called a part 20. There is a subtitle C, which are employment taxes. That's Social Security and that type of stuff. That is part 31. And then there's subtitle D, which are excise taxes. And excise taxes are taxes that are built in. When, like when you buy alcohol, there's already built in taxes behind the scenes, not to mention they put sales tax and stuff already on top of it.
Right.
Now then, the question becomes wages, which is what everyone thinks we have, are subtitle C. Can the Internal Revenue Service send you what's called a notice of deficiency or a substitute for return on subtitle C taxes called wages? And the answer is an unequivocal no.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break, Ralph, but I would love to come back and get into that because I'm not even sure what a notice of deficiency is. I try and stay as far away from the IRS radar screen as I possibly can. But for anybody out there that's battling them right now, I'm sure that they are on pins and needles waiting to hear what we're going to break down after the break. So we're going to go to a three-minute break. We'll come right back. Our guest today is Ralph Winterroad II. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now. You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction.
Truth Warrior with David Whitehead, Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Minute break. Ralph Winterroad II is our very special guest today, and we are talking all about the difference between the legal system and the lawful system, as well as the criminal organization known as the IRS. Ralph, I want to just kind of back up for just a quick second. Earlier in the broadcast, you had mentioned the fact that the Bar Association had effectively taken over the court systems. And one of the rumors out there that I hear all the time is that you need to have a license to practice law. And I've always thought, man, if I could just find a picture of one of these licenses to practice law, when in fact, I don't believe that there is a license to practice law. I think what we have is an association called the Bar Association that lawyers have to pay dues to. And unless you pay dues to it, you can't be involved with the court system. But I don't think anybody really understands what the Bar Association even is or how it came to be. Could you give us some information about that, Ralph?
Well, there's been a lot of stuff saying that our bar is tied into the English bar.
Yes.
And that is actually true, but it's not. It's the real evidence behind it is called the American Inns, I-N-N-S, Inns of Court. Now, they used to, on the Internet, they would identify the different lawyers or different judges that in each one of the states or jurisdictions was tied into the what's called American Inns of Court, and in that they actually stated they were tied into the Lincoln Inns in England.
Okay.
And that was a direct link we could prove. Now the American Inns of Court is just a real brief one, and it's members only to get behind the scenes, and they just got a little cover thing. So, because we're on a need to know, and of course we don't need to know.
Right.
So that's the thing with the – that's what's really going on behind there. There is a correlation between the law over here, but it's done through the American Inns of Court. It's not under this what bar means or something, all that other stuff. It's just nonsense.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, again, this topic is so full of misinformation, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. Are we correct when we say that the court systems exist in maritime jurisdiction versus –
Well, actually, you know – it's somewhat true, if you really want to get down to it. First of all, the court that's supposed to be in the federal court is supposed to exercise, judicial power, okay, in law in equity, right?
Right.
And it's supposed to be, these courts are supposed to be the judicial power of the United States. That means the judicial power of the United States is our contract, our constitution with a limited delegation of power.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, that doesn't happen. They've changed that. Okay, so if it doesn't, if we don't have, and we have to go back to really what constitutions, and I have all of those up through 1878, we should have a constitution of New York, a constitution of Florida, and the reason why it's supposed to be the name of that is constitution is what? Is our limited delegation of power, constitution of what? New York is the land. Law of the land. You've heard that. Okay, that's why it's supposed to be the Constitution of New York. It's not supposed to, and they've changed it because there are two types of constitutions. There's constitutions for corporate entities, and there's constitutions that are organic. Mm-hmm. First of all, for one of the several states, it should be the Constitution of New York, not the Constitution of the State of New York. So that's the first clue. Anytime it says, like Alaska, we didn't even get a smell. We have a constitution for the of the state of Alaska,
right.
And it's a corporate charter. So the other thing that how you can tell the two apart is like Alaska, amendments have to be external for organic constitutions. Amendments for a corporate charter will be incorporated in the main charter or constitution. Alaska has no external amendments. They rewrite it every year.
Huh, okay.
Okay, so that's the first thing that we have to get down to. Now into the separation of powers. Of course, Alaska is not one of the several states. Hawaii is not. A lot of the ones that came in later, they're not. Alaska is easily proven because we came in so late. But getting down to the judiciary, if we start off with the federal, and then you'll see how it went down into the thing. But in 1789, they had the Judiciary Act. And they created the District Court of the United States, a Circuit Court of the United States, and the Supreme Court of the United States, which is in the Constitution of the United States. It's not the U.S. Constitution. It's not United States Constitution. It's called a compounding of nouns. We have to learn proper English. It's called Constitution of the United States.
Okay.
Now, they came along in 1914, and they took the, they started off in the 1890s, and they created the Court of Appeals. And by 1914, they took the Circuit Court of the United States and said, we no longer need it. They said, we're going to do away with it, and we're going to have the Court of Appeals. But they actually said in 1914, we're taking the judicial power of the, quote, Circuit Court of the United States, end quote, and putting it in the district courts of the United States.
Okay.
So the appellate court then started off being a administrative type court outside the Constitution, the Court of Appeals. So then by 1940, and let me pull that up here, this is when it gets really interesting to understand what's going on and how sick it is that's out there, and we have no clue. Zero clue. In 1934, let me pull this up and I'll give you the actual statute here. And by the way, if anybody wants, like this, statute, I can send it to them in an email. And because you need to check things out, believe nothing.
Yes.
There's too much nonsense going on out there. But in 1934, they took over the civil side of the federal. And, just getting to it here. I'll be to it in just one second here. And in that, they got around, and this is just absolutely astounding. If this is where they took the rules of court, now this is said, they're talking about rules of court, and this is 48 Stat 1064, 1934. There shall take in effect 6 months after their promulgation. Now they're talking about the Supreme Court of the United States is going to promulgate rules concerning civil stuff.
Okay.
And thereafter, all laws in conflict therewith shall be of no further force and effect. The rules of court trump statutes.
Wow.
And that went into effect for the federal in 1940. Okay? They put it in 1934.
Okay.
And by 1940 that. Then in 1940, they did exactly the same thing for the criminal side. They got around and did exactly the same thing, and that is 54 stat with statutes at large 688. And they said exactly the same thing. Thereafter, all laws in conflict therewith shall be of no further force and effect. So therefore, the rules of court trump statutes. are in Alaska, they actually put it in the Alaska Rules of Court that their rules of court supersede statutes. So they allow the legislature in Alaska to play in the sandbox as long as they do not bump up against any bar Alaska Rule of Court. And if they do, it takes a two-thirds majority to overcome, to actually pass their legislative act the same as if the governor had vetoed. It takes a two-thirds vote there too.
Wow.
This is what's going on today. And people have no idea. The rules of court, that's why you see them quoted so much in the federal side and in the states, because they've taken over the bar, their rules of court, mm-hmm. been around, and they trump statutes.
Is this
actually in Alaska, and it's in other states, the Uniform Commercial Code in Alaska, they actually come out and said the Uniform Commercial Code is the supreme law in Alaska. The Commerce Code, and this, people have dealing all that sort of stuff in commerce, but you can't really beat them because it's all based on order. But the Supreme Court has held it. The commercial law is the supreme law of Alaska. And how do we get that? Because the legislature just declared it. Well, wait a minute. Who in the heck put you in charge that right. you can just bypass our, if we had a constitution in Alaska, a real one, which we don't, who put you in charge to do all this? Hmm. So now then we fast forward in Alaska and we go to the Alaska bar and you have to learn to read very carefully. Uh-huh. The legislature set up the, like the third district, first district, fourth district. Well, in 1974, they changed them to the third judicial district. The Alaska bar, all on their own motion in their own house, just says we now have the third judicial district and the fourth judicial district. They just did that on their own, so it's spontaneous. And we started off with a Superior Court of Alaska, which was a constitutional court, if you in name anyway. And we changed it now to in the Superior Court for the state of Alaska. For the state of Alaska?
Wow.
If I said I had a court for you, for people to come into, you think it might tell us that this might be a little on the bias side?
Right. A little conflict of interest indicated there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think? This is unbelievable. This is 1974 they did that. And these attorneys, then they got them to, they started this Rule 5. It's called an attorney oath. And that's allegiance to the Constitution of the United States, but they leave out the rest of it. So, you know, there's a more than just saying, you know, that I'm going to support or defend the Constitution, you know, against all. Well, guess what? What are you going to do about it? Well, they leave all that part out. So they get the attorneys. It's called oath of attorney, bound to the Alaska bar, and then they have a Rule 5 affidavit that they can't leave.
Wow.
And we're stuck. Yeah. They're stuck. We have, and then they quit doing oaths of office as a public officer. Because people are not taught how a republic works, it's a limited delegation of power from we, the people, because we're the only country in the world that have inalienable rights from our creator, and then we have a limited power in three separate branches. And in that branches, by the constitution or by a statute, they have to create what's called an office. And I'm not talking about a building, it's the limited duty that you are supposed to do mm-hmm. for me, for us. So we're granting you. That's why they call it an oath of office, but it has to be as a public officer. To enter it, you have to have an oath of office as a public officer. Well, you had to have an office from us created with powers and duties first. You have to have an oath of office if you're going to exercise those duties. And then the only two ways you can get there is either by a certificate of election from we the people that says we are going to vote you into the office that we've already created by constitution or by statute, or what's called a civil commission, Marbury versus Madison, that back in 1803. Well, guess what? In Alaska, they're supposed to be appointed. Do you know how many people, judges, or commissioners have civil commissions in Alaska?
How many?
None. And I got it right out of the state of Alaska. We don't even do civil commissions, but you gotta, not only is the constitution say you got appointed, you got it in plain simple English in statute. You can't, if you're going to be appointed, you have to have a civil commission signed with the term and by the governor. And you're saying you don't got it? And you print it? Vanessa White, she's just so arrogant. Say, what you gonna do about it?
Right. Well, here's my question then. Here's where I would go with that, Ralph, and I want to know what your opinion is on this. You know, in my studies, my studies really line up a lot with what you're saying, that these organizations like the bar and these court systems and even the legal agencies or the police agencies that are around here, all of these people that make up those organizations are agents of a corporation. And a lot of people don't know, especially in law enforcement, that all of those agents have a bond, which means that they are insured against them going out and wrecking state property or taking their gun and shooting people or doing whatever. And there's a lot of people out there that suggest that if somebody violates their oath or commits violence against you in the position as an agent of one of these corporations, that you can go out and put a lien against their bond. And I know a guy who has put a lien against a judge's bond here in Missouri, and that judge can't be a judge right now because he's not insured with the organization. Have you heard of anything like that? What do you think about
it? Well, okay. Judges do not have – I've never seen one where they have what's called an official bond. Mm-hmm. They have what's called an employee bond. Okay. And I've got a copy of the contract on that. And the judges are only insured because they're mere employees and not public officers.
Right.
They're insuring the state of Alaska that they don't steal the funds from the state of Alaska. They're not, it's not the official bond, it's in statute, but it doesn't cover judges. Oh, but okay. It's supposed to cover other people, like if we had sheriffs, which we don't. It covers people that hold, that handle money, and, the official bond is supposed to be, you're supposed to have a freeholder and have two pieces of property and you put it up, and this is how we hold you accountable, is you have to put up a piece of your stuff.
Yeah. Skin in the game is what we call that.
And, in Alaska, there's not one person has one of them. It's statutes, of course.
Right.
But, we don't need that because we don't need it because we're not one of the several states. It's all an illusion. Now, first of all, in the sheriff is a part of a state. And, he actually exercised some of the sovereignty. He's the chief, the sheriffs are the people. I think if the sheriffs would get together, this thing could change big time.
Oh yeah, I mean, Sheriff Mack.
He's the highest administrative officer. Mm-hmm. He can tell the feds take a hike if he understood what's going on and do it. And there's one up in, Wyoming did that.
Well, we've had Sheriff Mack on the show a few times. He's the head of the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association. If anybody out there wants to support that, CSPOA.org, absolutely fantastic. They are replacing sheriffs around the country with people who actually understand what the sheriff's role is. And I don't mean to interrupt you there, but I do have to plug the CSPOA at every available opportunity because they are doing exactly what you're suggesting right now, sir.
Well, that is one of the major problems that the sheriffs don't know, and they have the stroke. They have the power of posse comitatus. They have the power of the county. They're the only person that is authorized and empowered to deputize people for a county to get around and stand and fight. Mm-hmm. Nobody can, sheriffs or the police department can't do it. All police work typically under the cities. They work at the behest of the mayor. They're all part of a union. They exercise no police power. Just like our troopers up here in Alaska, they don't have any police power. What they really are is they're armed mercenaries because the state owns the cars. And we can prove that now and all they're doing. When we go to court, if you go to court and the state owns the property, do you think, and the judge works for the state and the trooper works for the state, do you think there might be a conflict of interest?
I think there might be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they tried to do a DUI thing on me here, and anyway, make a long story short, it didn't work out, of course, because I don't drive that way. But anyway, I went to court, and I went in. It was just traffic citation, 2 points, because they followed me trying to get a DUI on me. And anyway, I said, you know, first thing is we need to understand that I was driving a stolen car. Judge, oh, no, we don't even care if the car was stolen. We ain't going there. We can't go there. Well, I was, and that's what I'm going to sue them on, because we have all kinds of great statutes. You can't steal my property without me knowing about it. And they've stolen my car, and I can prove it. And you can go down here in Anchorage, and if you know where to go at the DMV, and they'll give you a copy of what's called the Manufacturer Statement of Origin that comes with every automobile. They're brand new. This document, whoever owns it, it's theirs. It says it's your property, and on the back, it has anybody that's got an interest in it. And up here, they, down here in out of Wasilla, they hand carry those over to DMV because it's money.
Right.
And then they get around. This is why we need a driver's license, because it's their car. And they, which is like leasing a car, they say you got to have insurance, you got to have a license. And there's cases. This is the easiest way to control the people. If it's our property, then of course we can collateralize it. But then we also can control the people, and they think that you need this is where the right to travel. We have a right to travel, but you don't have a right to travel if the state owns the car.
That's correct. That's correct. It comes down to registration too. All those key words that people just don't ever take the time to really figure out what they mean. They all mean things, you know.
Another one of the major problems, because I was over up here working on some people, trying to get them to offer them my expertise in the administrative law. Because, and I don't want to brag, but I know probably more about the administrative law than most people out there, right, including of the attorneys, unless we get to the higher level. And thanks to Amy Bunk, she was a head attorney at the Federal Register, and she explained to me how to read the Federal Register and how the abstract of it goes into CFRs, and how, you know, how to wade through this administrative nonsense and read it. And so anyway, what is the really the like in Common Core? You know, do you know what Common Core is?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the real problem with Common Core? What is the underlying thing that they do? How do they pull this off in America? And you know, it's really a simple solution. And you know what the solution is? Hmm. Quit taking their money. Now, this is a Supreme Court case of the United States. This is Babcock versus United States. And this case, excuse me, was done in 1919. I'm just pulling it up. And it says, this is the one that got me started. I could not believe it. And it's 250 U.S. 328. These general rules are well settled that the United States, when it creates rights in individuals against itself, that means a benefit. It is under no obligation to provide a remedy through the courts, period. And they list a jillion court cases.
Right.
That where a statute creates a right and provides a special remedy, that remedy is exclusive. So how they do this, and this is how Bill Gates and Melinda are controlling the Common Core, is they offer money. Mm-hmm. $250 million that they're offering money. And as soon as you take any money, you have no right to any remedy or anything at all. Zero. Zip. You just surrendered it all.
Wow.
And this is the game that's going on today. And there's another case that's even more succinct on this, too. This is called Allen, A-L-L-E-N, versus Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M. And this is 446 P2D 240. And this puts it in really plain English. It says, welfare benefits are grants by the legislature which are delegated to the Department of the Public Welfare the power to determine recipients of such grants. Under such circumstances, i.e. when the state creates rights and individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts and may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken in its exercise. And they cite Babcock and several other Supreme Court holdings. And this started back in 1792. Supreme Court said, you, as soon as you take a buck, you have lost all rights. So, in other words, you're saying, I want to surrender all of my rights, my unalienable rights, my rights to any remedy or anything for a dollar. I want to be a slave. Mm-hmm. I'll get down and kiss your tootsie. Give me money, and then I'm going to complain about I don't have any rights, and you're not treating me right, and you're being biased, you're being racial, you're being whatever the thing is. There's the game.
Right. So what do we do then? That's, I mean, is the very first thing you got to do to get on top of all of your contracts again, figure out what you've agreed to and
quit doing contracts. Now, like on child custody, mm-hmm. I hate doing those things. They're called cooperative agreements. We actually have written contracts between the CSSD, the child slavers, that's what I call them, it's because they are, the executive side and the courts, and it says that the judge is audited to make the most money. Hmm. They have the courts and the executive. So we have the courts and the executive in the contract, and people go into those courts thinking, oh, you know, golly, I got my ex-wife was over here. She's a drugger. So he's sleeping around or whatever the issues are. And this one's a pedophile. They're filling courts, by the way, in the foster home, some of them with pedophiles and all kinds of stuff. That's unbelievable. They have a contract for money. Cooperative agreements are called. And I can get you one in Alaska. It's real easy. We can tell where to go call. You can get your own out of Alaska. I've got one out of Greg Pound in Florida.
And what are they? What do they do?
these contracts are contracts for money, and what they do is they use a preponderance of evidence. They go in there and they say, oh yeah, well, you know, we gotta get the courts involved. And then they said, and then they go into the, child slaver folks, and they have, quotas. And I got they have to keep so many people in the system. And, they want to adopt out kids because the feds, I got that too, there's a, act of Congress that says we give you $4,000 over the quota, so we have bounty hunting on, children. And they say, oh, and this, by the way, get them youngins because they're easier to get rid of, get them away from the parents. $4,000 a head for the healthy ones and $2,000 for the sick ones.
Unbelievable.
Each over the quota.
Oh my gosh.
Does this sound like slavery?
Well, it absolutely does. It absolutely is. I mean.
Down in Florida, Greg Pound lost his children and, his, grandmother, his wife's, mother got them, and because she works for the state of Florida, she got all four of them and she got $40,000 because she works for the state of Florida.
Wow.
Between the state and the feds, and then they get around and they take care of them and they put them in the system. And what they're doing is they're auctioning our children off for money. Hmm. Get the contract. I got them in Alaska. If you want it, I'll give you a copy of it. Read it.
Well, I believe you. I believe you. So, okay, we've only got a couple minutes left.
I said, who in his right mind? And these judges know about it. And they're sitting up there, and these people go in there, and they can't understand what's going on. But look at what's happened to my child. They don't give a rat's rump about your children.
Right.
It's about money. They're selling us. They're selling our children for money. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. How do these people sleep at night? They're evil.
You're not going to get an argument with me on that one, man. I mean, I really feel like we are surrounded by evil, evil people with evil intentions in just about every avenue that you can look at this point.
Well, I think we may owe Sodom and Gomorrah an apology.
Man, I tell you, I don't disagree with that. I really don't.
We're in the Matrix, and people won't believe it. The thing is, we got so many people out there putting out I don't know what you want to call them, nonsense. You know, they've got a little bit of truth and a whole bunch of stuff like that. Turner was going to get around in his group. Whoa, we're going to take to get our republic back and we're going to be in charge and check things out. And the first thing is if they don't have any case, just like I beat the IRS, you send me a email at ralph@alaskabennettman.com. I will send you the case and you can check it out at Pacer. We won. It exists. Oh no, these cases are all sealed. Anytime you hear that, run like heck because you're being lied to.
Ralph, what else can people get from you from that email? You mentioned yesterday that you do a newsletter or something like that as well?
Well, I have a IRS list for a $250 donation to post a money order. I'm trying to get a home page up, but I got so many cases. I got 18 cases I'm involved in right now providing research.
All against the IRS or just in different regions?
Most of them are IRS. We're taking on the FAA and one in the Ninth Circuit. That one's out in the open if people want to see it. I've got one in the Ninth Circuit on the IRS, one in the 10th, and one in the 4th right now. It's just the appellate courts. I got 4 cases. I'm not even an attorney. I just do research material to people.
Right.
But, Ralph@AlaskaMinuteMan.com, and I have a show on Republic Broadcasting every Sunday. It's 5 to 7, on the internet, and, it's on some radio station, but it's Republic Broadcasting, and it's the Ralph Winter Road Show. It's spell the word winter, and then R-O-W-D, 2 R's. And I tell it like it is. I'm not for sale. Whatever happens, we're going to do it.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on and sharing your time and insight with us today. I would love to have you back on the show at your earliest convenience. I think this is a topic that needs way, way more exposure, sir. So thank you very much for showing up today.
Okay, well, I covered an awful lot in a very short period of time.
That's okay.
Thanks.
We'll do it again. Thank you, Ralph. See you later. Everybody, take care out there. We are moving on. That was the end of our broadcast today. And tomorrow, Aaron Dykes and
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with the Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.